You're listening to Hooked on Harness.
Esto va a llegar. Rion with the lead. Whiteside, presidential ball. Whiteside's coming on. Rion, Whiteside, the outside. Whiteside with the little brown chair.
Hello, good listener, and welcome to episode number 22 of Hooked on Harness. It has been nearly 2 months since our last recording. Even though there hasn't been any racing in that time, a whole lot to talk about and a lot of recent developments in the world of harness racing. I'm joined, as per usual, with my good friends Adam Keane and Bern Tobin. Adam, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Everything's good. We're basically managing through the world of COVID-19 and quarantine and all that stuff. How are you keeping busy and sane on the work and home front?
Well, the nice weather is helping. It's hard to believe just 2 or 3 weeks ago we had enough snow to have to wipe off our cars here in southwestern Ontario. Now it's in the bordering on 30 degrees. So that's, I think, made everyone in the household a little bit happier, including myself.
Yeah, that's great. And Bern, how about you?
I am chomping at the bit, Mr. Marcella. I'm ready to go. I think everybody listening here is, as I say, doing their best to stay safe, but we're ready to do some racing. And as I say, we're not going to be able to get out and see much of it live, but I think it's been missing from our lives and our livelihood, and we want to get back at it.
Yeah, certainly. I think a lot of us are missing many aspects of just broader society that have shut down over the last number of months. But certainly, we're happy to be back, and a lot to talk about, given that there has not actually been any racing since our last episode. So we will go through on this episode, what does the restart of harness racing across North America look like, depending on where you're listening to us. Your jurisdiction has either just got back up and running in terms of harness racing. Certainly where we sit here in Ontario, we're probably about a week and a half away from the reopening. And what's that going to look like in terms of qualifiers, in terms of safety precautions, all that kind of stuff? Does it come back exactly as previous? Are there going to be some changes? We expect that there are going to be some modifications to keep everybody safe and well. We'll do our usual horse updates. We have a number of horses to run through and some new ones that have been added to our docket of horses of interest. We'll go through our regular section on innovation. I think in the context of what we're coming back from or getting back to normal with, innovation and opportunity is something that is weighing very large right now. And then I also want to get a little bit of insight from both of you on the return to racing and what's going to actually happen on the track, not just in terms of the horses and the drivers, but also in terms of the bettors and the wagering. What does that look like when you basically have a prolonged shutdown across the entire sport, and what does that mean? Given that the three of us are all recording this virtually for the second straight episode, let's just do a drink check in the absence of the usual craft beer review. So looking forward to that and getting some of your insights. Stick around. Okay, so as we sit here recording on the 27th of May, Ontario, the jurisdiction that we're sitting in, is probably about a week and a half away from reopening. We'll get to the other jurisdictions that we're following a little bit more closely in a minute. But Adam, from your perspective, what do you think we're going to see in Ontario, both in terms of racing experience and maybe some of the extra precautions, recognizing that all of this is continuously changing and it's a pretty fluid situation? But what do you think we're going to see in a week and a half?
Yeah, so I think as far as the racing experience, a bit of a preview is actually what it looked like the last few days before racing shut down in Ontario back in mid to late March. So there was that 3 or 4 day stretch where they were racing, no spectators, no owners of horses even allowed on the premises. It was just down to like a skeleton crew. So I think that's very much going to be what it's going to look like. The big question mark, I'm seeing some scenes come in from like the German soccer league where they have cut out cardboard, you know, people and fans in the background. Some places are piping in crowd noise. In some ways, we might hear more of the actual sounds of the game or of the sport. If you think about when you're watching it on home at home, because that's going to be the only way you can actually take part in it. So it's going to be different. I mean, I'm just curious to see how it's going to look and feel, especially when we get into the big races, which have that extra amped up, you know, energy that kind of comes across, even if you're watching it on TV. So I'm curious to see how that's all going to play out.
Yeah, and it's interesting because a run-of-the-mill Saturday night in Ontario in the summertime, I think people are, lots of harness racing fans are accustomed already to consuming the sport remotely. Like, you don't need to be watching it live to really enjoy the experience. So in that sense, I do feel like maybe harness racing is a little bit more tuned to that way of thinking compared to other, let's say, non-horse-related sports. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it could be a real opportunity, even the way they change the experience, like a broadcast experience. I watched a bit of the golf match between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. And it was interesting. I mean, no fans. It's just the one group going around. But just some of the things they were able to do that they would have never done before, in terms of like the miking up, having cams in the carts, you know, other ways to sort of capture some of what was going on. So that's the piece that I'm hopeful that the sport and tracks will recognize, that this could be a chance to do something a bit different. You know, especially those tracks that are very seasonal, because those ones, I don't think they have quite the built-in, you know, virtual following. A lot of the B tracks that we refer to them as in Ontario. So for those, it could be, you know, it'll be quite a bit different than I could picture back Saturday evenings at Hanover Racetrack in Ontario, you know, bringing in your own lawn chairs. I mean, they won't have any spectators at that track, and it's going to look quite different. So, yeah, that's sort of just some of the things I'm thinking about when we do get back. It'll be great to be back. It has been, what's it been, 2-3 months by the time it's all said and done. So long overdue to have that return to racing.
Yeah, for sure. And Bern, what do you think from the altered experience? Anything on your end in terms of what you're seeing from the other jurisdictions that you're looking at?
Well, I mean, here in Ontario, for starters, I mean, I've been talking to my trainer, Tim Cherwayko, and those guys are all ready to go. I mean, there's some strict protocols. Everybody will be wearing masks. The races will be 25 minutes apart at Mohawk. They'll be double spacing the horses. Basically, you'll have basically a horse in every second stall, and spreading them out, and you know, and you can only stay so long. You got to get your horse out of there. So they're going to be pretty strict, and you know, the protocols that that WEG's built are basically, along with Ontario Racing, are being sort of fanned out to all the different races. And I think before I'll go on, I will say, I think we all own a big shout out to Jim Lawson, who's a CEO of Woodbine Entertainment, who's shown some great leadership and throughout this pandemic, and you know, really spearheaded a lot of the things that needed to get done, and gave this industry a lot of leadership to get us back to the races. So a big shout out to Jim Lawson. Today is a Wednesday, the 27th, and this is the first day of training at Mohawk. So the first time the horses have been back to the facility. And I saw some tweets there today from some trainers I know saying, hey, everybody's wearing masks. Everybody's being safe, and no griping. We're all in this together, rowing the boat in the same direction. So that's good to hear. So so far, so good. In other jurisdictions, I mean, Ohio's open. Ohio debuted last weekend, and I had to do some watching there because I needed my fix and some couple of my old horses,
sure,
who I've talked about in the past. Hal and Sammy and Get Around Town raced on Friday or Saturday night, so I had to tune in and watch those guys go. But looking forward to watching our horses go, because we got a bunch of them.
All right, gentlemen, since our last time, last episode, the last time that we did a horse update, we've had a couple of new additions. But what's really unusual about this current situation is that we are going to have the entire industry basically coming back within the span of a week and a half. So let's talk about some of our more, I guess, older, more established horses. Adam, odds on Amethyst, what's the latest that you're hearing from Pat?
Yeah, hearing a lot of good things. I'm getting the pictures through Instagram. Odds is looking good. He's put on a bit of weight, which is actually usually a good thing for horses, especially when they're racing so often. So the break has been good to him. He probably needed it around when it happened. And in the past, when he's had one of these extended layoffs, he's always come back really good right out of the gate. So I'm fingers crossed that when we do get back here in another week or so, he's going to be primed and ready. He does look really fresh, and he's got a nice sheen to his shine to his coat, which is good to see. But yeah, there's really no telling until they pull away from the starting gate. What you exactly have after a 2-3 month layoff.
So would you guys would Pat have normally shut him down around this time anyhow? Like, would he have been due? You said that he was kind of due for a break. Would that have been something that he would have done in other years, or is that just kind of making the most of the situation?
Yeah, he has had breaks more over the parts of the summer. I'd say this would have been a little bit early, any type of a scheduled shutdown, but you kind of, play the, like everybody, play the cards that you're dealt, and having a bit of a break for a horse that's 9 years old, a lot of miles on him, and let those aches and pains kind of go away. So that's been a good thing with part of this.
That's Pat calling right there right now with an update, by the way.
Yeah, that's Pat calling on my landline. I've never been happier to have a landline, guys. I don't know about you. Okay, so Bern, over to you. A couple of your older horses. Why don't you just run through what's happening with Spare Seed and Need Your Opinion?
Yeah, Spare Seed, a.k.a. Khan, the intergalactic warrior, as we like to call him. Now, it's interesting to talk about odds on Amethyst, a horse of the year, and then go all the way to a marginal claiming trotter. But he's been good. He's very much the same, needed a break. Was making some breaks at the end of that period of time, and we kept him off the track for a month. He swam for a month, and he's looking real good. As I say, he is what he is. I don't think he's going to be become a world beater, but I think he'll come back sound and race pretty good for us. So we are hoping to be surprised, and I think you're going to find a lot of horses like that. We're going to talk about that a little later about how horses will come back from that. We have 1 3-year-old ready to go. We have another one, but we'll focus
need your
on
opinion.
We'll focus on yeah. need your opinion. The War We Needy Filly, who raced in Ontario for us last year, finished second in the first gold, and then got a little sore along the way. She had the winter off, and she has come back gangbusters, training tremendous, and she's due to qualify on Friday. So. She may be the first horse to get back here, depending on what the draw is. She might be able to get back the following week into the first draw. So we're really looking forward to her. I think if she comes back sound, she could be a lot of fun. She's gritty, she's tough, and she's fast. And if she keeps going the way she's going, I think she may surprise a little few folks.
She looks really good in her training sets. I mean, for what that amounts to, right?
Exactly.
In terms of actual training. For whatever that counts for. Speaking of training sets and whatever that counts for, Adam Keene, why don't you talk a little bit about the first official horse of the Hooked on Harness podcast, and that would be Walk on the Moon, the Archangel Trotter. What are you seeing there, and what are you liking, and maybe next steps?
Yeah, now this is Adam. So I want to ask so this is not the first horse we've ever owned, but this is the first.
Sure.
I believe this is the first yearling Mr. Keene has been associated with. Well, and he's had to live through the ups and downs all winter, and he's getting close to the races. So I want to hear about the experience and how that horse looks.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So this is the first horse that all three of us are in on together, and there has been a lot more ups than downs. If I think back over the last. Several months. It's been kind of, check mark after check mark as far as the progress that he's been making. Watching the latest videos from, was it last weekend, Bern, that he trained 207, 208, something around there. He's done everything right on the racetrack from what I've seen. Seems, more mature than his age. I mean, a lot of these horses, it's amazing that for a two-year-old horse to be doing the things they do when they hit the track, for starters, but especially with the kind of the just the maturity that you see with him, looks really good. So I'm trying not to get my hopes up too far, because I know with young horses, especially trotters, they can be dashed in an instant. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely here mid-May, late May, couldn't really have asked for much more.
Yeah, I mean, as a trotter, he doesn't wear trotting hobbles. He's, you know, clean gaited, and you know, just tries hard, and he's never really had a bad day. And you know, we're 3 weeks from three weeks from qualifying, and you know, fewer downs than ups, and hopefully it stays that way.
Go ahead, Adam.
Well, I was just going to say, you mentioned the you know, he's very clean looking. And I think that's a great sign. You know, by the time I've seen some of the horses, the different equipment, the tips and the tricks that you're throwing at them as trainers do to get them to go, you know, mostly right. Just that foundation that he has just seems so pure.
Yeah, and I think this is a horse that, to your point, Adam, has checked all the boxes to this point. But, you know, just hearkening back to our last episode, the real question will obviously be, when there is a bit of a setback, how does he respond to that? And can he stay healthy? I mean, that's always what it boils down to, I think. Mm-hmm. Moving right along, guys, because we've got a lot of horses to cover here. Kind of in the same vein of horses doing everything that we'd expect them to do. Bern, why don't you talk for a minute about Beef and Cheddar, who, from my opinion, has looked like an absolute beast over the last couple of months.
So Beef and Cheddar is the half brother to Need Your Opinion. Both of the horses bred by Matt Chappell down Chatham, Ontario, friend of Hooked on Harness. And, you know, just say we've been lucky and privileged to own some shares in both of them. And this guy has been just good since day one. Big sort of black, better than Cheddar colt. And, you know, just got a big engine and just does everything right. He's got some high speed and... as I say, he's been top of the heap since he showed up there in October, and hopefully, you know, a lot of the good ones are good on day one, and it's nice to see that. It's and hopefully he continues that way. He's, as I say, he's done everything right, and he'll be qualifying along with Walk on the Moon in about 2 weeks, and maybe we might get our pictures taken with virtually in front of our computer screens or something like that.
Yeah, virtually superimpose my photo, hopefully, at some point. Who knows? Or maybe by that point, we're actually allowed back at the track. We'll see. Keystone Raven, I'll just give a quick update there. She's probably been set back to the end of the summer, maybe September-ish, if all goes well, recovering from a minor surgery after kicking the side of her stall. I think she had a couple of bone chips that needed to be taken out. Pretty minor, but unfortunate. Because it obviously puts her behind the group of all the other two-year-olds that are currently at the stable. Bern, I think in a previous episode you talked about Northern Blizzard, and that's another two-year-old, and that's the one that your mother-in-law bought a share on. But what are the recent updates there? I got to confess, I haven't watched Northern Blizzard terribly closely over the last month and a half, but what are you seeing on that front?
Well, you may remember from the episode I told you that my mother-in-law, God bless her, knows how to make money. And anytime she buys a horse, I always take note. She bought Northern Blizzard, a share in him at thestable.ca. And he was a big, growthy colt. And I just thought it was a great pedigree. I think if he finds it, it'll be okay. And he has been just really going really well the last 2 months, ever since she bought him. And he's at the point now where he trotted a mile in the bike along with Beef and Cheddar and Walk on the Moon last weekend in 2.7. Looks like the real deal. I think she's got a tiger by the tail. And now the thing with this horse is he's big, he's growthy. The challenge will be to, you know, he's a two-year-old, is to keep him sound and keep him together through his two-year-old season. Sometimes the big horses, you know, the aches and pains pile up on the young ones, and they don't give you everything they have as a two-year-old. But I think he's going to be a nice horse. Whether he's going to get there this year, we'll wait and see, but he's moving in the right direction.
And he's in the same bucket with Walk on the Moon and Beef and Cheddar in terms of qualifying in a couple of weeks, so that's great news. Bern, you kind of surprised me about 3 weeks ago when you mentioned that you'd bought a share in another horse, and I was surprised that you had, and I was doubly surprised when you told me who the horse was. So can you talk a little bit about White Tiger and how you ended up owning a piece of that horse?
Well, people who follow the stable.ca will know White Tiger. He was one of the, you know, he was one of their big stars 2 years ago as a two-year-old racing the Peter Houghton. Made $150,000, son of Muscle Massive, and, you know, a really nice horse. And as a three-year-old, they'd paid him into the Hamiltonian and a bunch of stakes races. And it just didn't come together. It just didn't happen for him. And, you know, it just didn't come back as well as a three-year-old. And it was a struggle for Anthony McDonald and all the team over there to get him right. And as I say, they didn't get him there. But he started to really come around at the end of the year and into February. January, February, and then they turned him out in anticipation of a four-year-old season. So some shares came up, and I bought him, and I said, you know, I just think this guy could be a really nice top older trotter. And for anybody who's listened to this podcast, they'll know the story of my old horse, Maple Leaf Buddy, who I bought at the, you know, May of his four-year-old season. Big, strong, strapping trotter who'd made $10,000 and then went on to make a half million. So I'm putting my money where my mouth is, and I'm going to say that this fellow is going to be a nice older trotter, and I'm hoping for a fun ride. When he comes back, you'll probably see him in July.
So before we talk about our regular innovation section and some of the opportunities coming out of the current situation, let's just do a quick drink check in the absence of the usual craft beer review. So, Adam Keene, what are you drinking this evening?
Well, it's far from crafty, but it's a staple around my fridge. It's a Heineken, which you can't go wrong. From my perspective, and it's been hard to get craft beer in these parts, a little bit more limited selection, so this will do the job.
Yeah, that's great. Bern, what about you?
Well, I'm holding a cool bottle, a nice Mexican cerveza, the old Corona, the old standby, you know, a nice light, crisp beverage. I can't be drinking too heavily in recording podcasts. That's against the rules. So a nice light, crisp beverage that, as I say, will keep me fresh and vibrant throughout the broadcast.
And you can both laugh at me now. I'm drinking a Campari with Perrier with a drop of orange juice. Without apology. There you go. Nice Italian cultural drink. Very, very yummy. Let's switch over to innovation and opportunity. I took a look in the most recent issue of Trot, which was the April edition. And they did a really neat section that I think I've seen versions of this in years gone by. But they basically went through some of the new types of wagering that are being considered. Very interesting, just in terms of, I think they went through about 10 or so different new potential wagers, really as a way, and those of you who've listened to this podcast, and certainly Adam and Bern, you both know that I am the least qualified person on the planet to talk about wagering, but there's some interesting concepts in there. I'm wondering, Adam or Bern, if either of you have an opinion on what you saw looking at that article. I can certainly talk for a few minutes on what my impressions were.
Yeah, Adam, I mean, as I say, we got you into this sport a few years ago as an owner. We also need new bettors. So, I mean, I'm looking at a lot of these ideas that the guys came up in Trot. What sparks your interest? Lots of neat stuff here, fixed odds, wagering. I like the idea of betting against the favorite.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge wager by any stretch of the imagination. However, I understand the importance to the overall growth of the sport. So if I'm looking at it through the lens of, well, what kind of wagering is actually good for somebody to come into the sport with, it certainly is not some of the more exotic ones, right? Like the ones that require a paragraph and a half to explain what they are. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested. There are a few in here. What's interesting as well is that I think all the, I guess, experts that they polled in this, the variability in opinions on any of these things is remarkable. So if you're listening to this and you've not checked out the article, it's worth checking out. Like you'll see, you know, people who know what they're talking about a lot more than I do when it comes to wagering, ranging it from giving it an A grade to an F grade and everything in between, right? So you kind of either love it or hate it. I don't think there's any option that's going to make everybody happy. From my perspective as a newbie, I favor the ones that are really simple. So for example, like a match bet, like just one horse against another with roughly the same odds, roughly the same lines on them, like, you know, pick who's going to win. I like the idea, Burn, as well, of, you know, betting against the favorite, taking the field against the favorite. I think that's kind of neat. There was one in there that I think we recorded an episode about a year ago. The example from Sweden. What was the name of that lottery in Sweden?
The V75.
So they're calling it like a survivor pick 10 for a much larger pool. You could see how, what I like about that is it's super easy to communicate even to people who aren't rabid harness racing fans, and you have the potential there to draw a lot more people in because it's just a very intuitive wager that's easy to understand. Some of the other ones just were a little bit baffling to me, like multi-track wagers. I'm like, why bother? Something about parlaying bets, which is just, I don't know, not something that I'm all terribly interested in. And just flipping through it here, one of the ones that was the most bizarre was flex wagering, which is just, I think one of the reviewers actually, it was published in the article, ultra confusing and really unnecessarily complicated. So those are the ones that I steer away from. And I think the ones that are just more intuitive and simple to explain. And ideally you can tell how simple it is to explain based on how many words it took to explain it in the article. So if you can explain it in a sentence, that's a pretty good start, right?
What about prop bets? You know, all kinds of neat things like, you know, betting what driver is going to win the most races on the card and stuff like that.
Sure, and I think that's a pretty easy one to explain, right? Like, yeah. If you're going to be there for the night taking in 10 races, which driver do you think is going to win the most races? I'm all in favor of options that keep people engaged for longer. So now instead of me just tuning in to the one or two races where I might have a horse that's involved, I might stick around and watch a half dozen races. Or if I'm there, I've got a reason because I'm talking about driver prop bets and which driver is going to win the most over the course of the night. So that's all good. I don't know that is that enough to draw somebody in. It doesn't hurt, right? As an option, I think, you know, the article makes the point of saying, like, you know, as a sport, the sport probably does need to continuously evaluate these types of options. But again, I'm the least qualified person in the world to be talking about this. What do you guys think?
No, I agree with your point there, Adam, just around options and having different selection. I think that's why you see that spectrum from some of those real good handicappers, you know, rating from A to F on some of the same bets. You know, some people that are really into the betting, they are great at picking winners. Others are great at predicting the order within a race. So even within the current options, it can cater to kind of strengths or weaknesses of different bettors. I go back to the one that you mentioned first as one that I would be personally really intrigued by, which was betting against the favorite. I can think back to races where I've done that using the existing bets. I've basically bet on every horse to win except the favorite. I haven't managed to hit it yet. Thought I was really close one time. Horse that was 1-9 broke stride. I thought I'm laughing all the way to the bank here with a big long shot that's going to win, and the horse came back and actually won. So I've been seduced into trying to find a place to bet against the favorite like that. So I'd be all in on that type of a bet.
And it's just so much easier to articulate to a newbie that's an actual kind of codified bet within the system, as opposed to betting 9 other tickets on 9 other horses, which for somebody who's new to it, they're probably not going to have the confidence to try that, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, that's neat. Burn, anything else on your end?
No. What's interesting to me as we come back into the races, Adams, is the launch of the Dark Horse app. Woodbine and Wegg is coming out with an app, so really geared to the consumer market, the non-racing market. And the app is, you know, it's an AI app, artificial intelligence, algorithms, you know, smart computers thinking on behalf of bettors, basically looking at the program, playing handicapper, digesting and all the information, and recommending bets. They're holding their cards pretty close to the vest, and we'll probably see some of that this week and next. But the whole idea is, I think that if you're a new bettor and you want to try something, and they may ask you what your risk is, how much you want to bet, and the app will suggest you, say, hey, here's a bet, try this one, it'll pay for $5, you can make a couple hundred bucks, and that artificial intelligence is doing the thinking for you, and you can bet with confidence, and it's pretty neat. I can't wait to see it. I think it may open the door to a lot of people to sort of just grab on their phones and hit the dark app, and maybe I'll bet the horses and see what the boys are recommending for me and see if I can make some money. Don't have to understand or read a program, I just think it's probably a real smart move on behalf of those guys.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think that, I enjoy, obviously, I think most people, understanding and reading the program. But at the same, in the exact same breath, I'll say I've never bet a superfecta. I've never bet a pick three. I've never bet any of the other exotics. So if this is a way to make those types of wagers more accessible without making me, I have no problem looking stupid. That's not a problem for me. But I think for most folks, going up to a till or going up to somebody who's taking their wager or going online and trying to figure it out for themselves might be more challenging. If this strips away some of that complexity and makes it easier for them, and in the live track experience, they don't have to kind of go and try and figure it out in front of somebody and look kind of silly doing it, I think that's a good thing.
Adam, I'm probably on the other end where I haven't found a bet I haven't liked, but I still think that this is actually really interesting for people that maybe are more seasoned into the wagering options, but could still be I'm just as interested to try this out and see how it all works.
It's hard to believe that if they could launch a product like that and have it appeal to both ends of that spectrum, like newbies who are maybe getting involved for the first time, going to the track for the first time, and then on the other end, more seasoned horse player, that would really be an interesting product. So the next month or so should tell the story. I can pretty much guarantee that can be a future segment on a future episode of Hooked on Harness. Just going to shift gears a little bit here. We talked a little bit about opportunities before we started recording, opportunities that are coming out of this. Harness racing is really poised to be one of the first major sports, I call it a major sport, to actually come back after the quarantine and lockdown. And part of that, guys, what are you hearing from a return to television perspective as it relates to TSN here in Canada?
Well, Adam, word has it is that, Woodbine Entertainment has been talking to TSN to get harness racing and thoroughbred racing on the network Thursday and Friday nights. So, again, as you mentioned, most major networks are starved for sports, and I can only watch so many, 1974 Philadelphia Flyer Boston Bruin replays, and I was a Philadelphia Flyer fan, but that's all right. I've seen it. I want to watch some live sports. So, as one of the only ones returning, and one of the first ones returning, I think there's a great opportunity here to get the game back on national television. We haven't seen it since The Score Monday nights ended, 10 years ago. It'll be great to have it back on it, on a national television, get it in front of some new eyeballs. A generation probably hasn't seen the sport, so tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, that's
I agree,
Brian.
Just to get it back onto the mainstream airwaves, get it in front of more people. I mean, right now it can be difficult. You have to kind of know what you're trying to do to get it right. So, just to open it up to a bigger group, and they're mm-hmm. dying right now for the same kind of content.
And
you can only run out so many e-racing, e-sports is getting big right now. That's the only thing really going is video games on TV.
And I think I think they're timing the Dark Horse app for this very opportunity, right? I mean, I can see these guys on national TV with every third spot saying, "Hey, go online and grab your Dark Horse app and bet away and join the game. So I think this is a really neat tie-in and connection that they can really, really push forward.
And I mean, the reality is, if you're an avid fan of the sport, you're going to go and find it, even if that means, 15, 20 mouse clicks to get there. And I just remember that from 3 years ago, kind of starting to follow the sport more intently, the amount of effort that you had to go through to find it. Whereas here, I think it picks up a lot of passive viewers, right, who are just looking for something that's live versus, Burn, to your point, a hockey game from the 1970s. So no, it's good to see. I'm interested to see if they can keep that going for a prolonged period. And certainly, I know at least the three of us will probably be watching it if that does come to transpire. And certainly, timing it with that new app is pretty intriguing on a number of fronts. We talked a little bit earlier in the episode about the restart of harness racing across North America, what that's going to look like from a health and safety perspective in the face of COVID-19. What we haven't talked about yet, though, and I just want to get both of your thoughts on, is when the return to racing actually does happen, if it hasn't happened already, certainly within the context of Ontario, what's actually going to happen on the track, both in terms of horse performance, what can we expect? I don't know that we've ever seen the entire field come back all together off of a layoff in this kind of a way. And what does that mean, given that we were just talking about wagering and betting, what does that actually mean for the bettors? So Adam, do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, the short answer is who knows what it's going to mean. I mean, to your point, we haven't seen anything like this. There's really never an off season for harness racing the way there is in other sports, even thoroughbreds for that matter. So I think it's going to be really interesting. I mean, my kind of initial instincts would be, if I was to be a bettor on a race, would be to go with more established horses, not necessarily worry about how their last race or two was in terms of how they finished or their time, but looking further back. One of the factors that I would never normally consider would be a horse's age. However, I would probably skew a little bit to those that have been that are a bit longer in the tooth, potentially. All things being equal, that could be a factor. A horse that's just more mature, that's been through it before, sort of on pause, but then restarted on its own program. So, yeah, it's really anyone's guess how it's going to look like, what the angles will be. I think for me, I'd probably go slow at first, take in a few rate cards, and just see if there are some biases towards certain trainers might get back into playing the post position, some of the conventional factors and defaulting to those more than current form, because that's entirely out the window.
Yeah, and I think your point about trainers is probably where my head would naturally go, but you're right, like some very basic stuff like post position. Byrne, what about you?
Well, I mean, A lot has been made about whether you know all these horses should have qualifiers, and the sheer numbers just sort of took that away from the equation. We got all these horses to qualify, got to get racing going, so we couldn't get it done. So any horse that had a line as of February 1st will not have to qualify. Anybody who doesn't have a line will have to qualify. Obviously, 3-year-olds coming back off of their winter sojourn. And 2-year-olds will all qualify. But building on a point that Adam made about some of those older horses, I'm going to look for back class. Horses that have done really well in the recent past but may have been off form. The bottom line here is these horses have been off 2.5 months. And 2.5 months can cure a lot of aches and pains, a lot of bumps and bruises. And a lot of times horses don't have that much of a break. I think you're going to see a lot of horses come back refreshed and doing well, and I'm not going to pay a whole lot of attention to the last few lines. I am going to look a little deeper into the program. I'm going to look at the trainer, take a lot of that into account when I'm looking at the horses. I think it's a great opportunity for the bettors. It's tough to play your traditional strategies and your traditional approaches, other than the things that you guys mentioned, which are sort of like solid cornerstones. But I think there's going to be bombs all over the place. I think the money's going to be spread around. I think you're going to see some tremendous betting boards with favorites at like 3, 4, 5 to 1, maybe. You know, and you know, there's going to be some nice opportunities to cash if you can pick the right horse. And hey, that never changes, does it?
Hey, Bernie, you touched on an interesting point. Like, we're talking about this restart, certainly as it applies to Ontario. We're talking about hundreds of horses, right? Like, if we get through the ones that have to qualify plus the ones that maybe don't have to qualify, I'm thinking like the older horses, like Odds. This has got to be in the order of hundreds of horses, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Woodbine are going to qualify almost 400. And then you've got the smaller tracks, Kawartha, Georgian, Hanover. They're all scheduling qualifiers. So you throw in a couple of more hundred there. Then you got all these horses coming back that don't need a line. Then you got the two-year-olds coming out in 3 weeks, and there'll be hundreds of them. You're talking, I'd say you got to be talking close to 1,000 horses.
This is going to be bananas. So much fun. Well, listen, we are very much looking forward to getting back to, at a minimum, watching some races, even if we can't be at a track to do it. So thank you for hanging with us and hope you enjoyed the episode. Please like and subscribe if you enjoyed the episode, if you've been listening to us in the past. It really does help other harness racing fans find the podcast. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook, and also email hookedonharness@gmail.com. We look forward to talking to you again soon, and thank you for listening.